Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And you're welcome back. Lorna, good afternoon to you.
Hello, how are you?
Lorna, you were up for the match on Saturday?
We were. We drove from Kerry up for the match.
And I think I was saying earlier on, all of us Kerry fans are licking our wounds today. But you actually came across an actual medical emergency. Was it as you were coming out after the match?
Yeah, it was after the match. It was just coming into the city centre. We were going for a taxi. And an elderly Kerry fan, he missed the pavement and fell into the middle of the road and bashed his head on the road, and he was bleeding. And Kerry and Dublin fans, my partner is a Dublin fan, included, he had first aid, went over to the man, and we put our coat on him and put something under his head. Now, he was lying right across the road. And we rang an ambulance, a young lady there rang an ambulance, and we waited 20 minutes and no ambulance came. So she rang again, and she was assured that the ambulance was on its way. So 15 minutes later, I rang an ambulance, and I was told there is no ambulances. They didn't know when there would be an ambulance.
Okay, do you know what, Lorna, I might just hold you there for one moment, and just the line has gone a bit poor for us, and we'll try and get you back on a better line. And while we're doing that, I might go to John Farley. Good afternoon, John.
How are you doing?
Yeah, your line is a lot better, John.
I had a similar problem on Friday evening. A neighbour of mine fell just beside his door. A neighbour helped him onto his seat, rang an ambulance, and the ambulance didn't come for 2 hours. And I heard this morning that he may have a broken hip. Now, he had a very bad cut, but there were four separate calls sent in, and there was some woman on the phone, apparently a doctor, kept asking how the patient was, but no ambulance came.
And were you being reassured, you know, that we're trying to find one?
The impression I got was that there was a lot of confusion. Now, there's two parts to my little thing. That one, when I heard your outrider, I decided I would ask the other question. Not very long ago, maybe 6 weeks ago on RTA, I heard that there was a dispute with the ambulance service. They have moved the call centre over to Talla from the old fire service. Now, the fire service won't go to Talla, and apparently the fire service don't get any more ambulances, and the ambulances are sitting out there in the call centre. And if that's the case, it really, really should be highlighted, Candy.
Yeah, well, I actually, coincidentally enough, I did a bit of reporting on this story myself some time back, earlier on in the year. And I think that there is an issue with resources, that the Dublin Fire Ambulance Service, they have been calling for more resources, and they've been complaining about the lack of resources for a long time. And there is, as you say, a dispute about, you know, where the calls are going through to. You're saying that, so this was last Friday. What time did the call go in for the
5:30, and the ambulance finally came at 7:30. Now, if you had a serious heart attack, or if you had cut an artery or something, or if you had, God forbid, if you were knocked down, there's no way you could survive 2 hours.
No, I think, and to be fair, I should say this, because as I say, I did some reporting on this. They will say that if it's a top priority, you know, like a heart issue or cardiac issue, that those ambulances do get prioritised. And it is probably people like your neighbour with a possible broken hip that get pushed down the line then. And of course, that is a huge issue, isn't it? Because nobody wants to be left for 2 hours if you've that kind of an injury.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I felt anyway that, you know, it was really, really unjust to leave a man sitting.
And how was he like? Was he distressed or?
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And the other thing then is, you know, if he had fainted or if he had fallen off the chair, what would happen then?
Yeah.
Or maybe if he had to start panicking and trying to get up. Now, he was a very, very solid man, a very good man. He has plenty of experience in life. But I was just thinking about if it weren't so.
Yeah, well, I suppose none of us wants to be in a situation to be waiting for an ambulance one way or another. And there's always stress. There's always stress involved in that, whether it's 10 minutes or, as you say, in your case, 2 hours.
Are you sure, Katie, that isn't the case where there are ambulances sitting over in Talla, and because the dispute is going on, they're not allowed to use them? That's what I heard.
I don't know, is the honest truth. If it's anyone out there who knows more about this, we would love to know, because obviously anybody sitting with somebody for 2 hours waiting for an ambulance is a very is a distressing situation. Will you stay there, John, because I've got Lorna back on. I've got Lorna back on, I think. Lorna, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
Okay, that's a better line, Lorna. So you were telling us you were with this man. He was lying on the road after the match. He bleeding from the head, and you were calling for this ambulance.
Yeah, we called twice, and then the third time I called and I said, can I have an ambulance? And I was told there are no ambulances. So then I said, do you have a rough estimate of the time? And I was told they don't know.
Right.
So then I said, what do you want me to do with an elderly man lying across the middle of the road that hit his head? And he said, I don't know. And hung up the phone.
Well, I'm sure...
His words, exactly. So then we, as a group, decided maybe if we call the police. So we called the police. It rang out twice. And they rang me back about 5 minutes later and said they couldn't help me. So then that's about an hour from the first call. Then my partner's mother, when she used the bathroom in the hotel that was 3 doors down, and the manager came out with the pillow and duvet, and an off-duty paramedic who happened to be at the game, a Dublin fan, came and helped out. And then about 15 minutes later, an off-duty doctor happened to be walking past and helped out. But an hour and 15 minutes later, when we left them in the hands of the people that could do something without having a big crowd, no ambulance had arrived.
Okay, so that's an hour and 15 minutes. We don't actually know what time that ambulance did actually get there for that man.
No. And even the doctor and the paramedic that turned up. Now, my partner has first aid. She's not a doctor or a paramedic. Said they did not want him moved. We had put him in the recovery position because we didn't want him to talk. My partner had his flag and his hand underneath his head to keep it off the ground, but we couldn't move him anymore because they didn't know if he would have sustained a head injury from hitting the pavement.
Okay. We're really getting bad trouble with your line again, Lorna, but I think we have the bones of the story there. And as you say, we still don't know actually what actually was the ultimate outcome of that ambulance call. But you're saying it an hour and 15 minutes and there was no sign of the ambulance when you left them in the hands of a doctor and a paramedic.
Yes, correct.
Okay, Lorna, I leave there because I want to go to Father Gary Donegan. Father Gary?
Hello, how are you?
How are you? You have another post-match, unrelated to the ambulance issue, but another issue that occurred when you were up in Dublin for the match at the weekend.
Yeah, I came up for the replay, and when I went and I parked in a place called Home Villas, a kind of residential area, Donnybrook area, near Herbert Park, and I was last at my car at about 11 o'clock, and I was staying with a friend close by, and in the morning then I was actually due to go over to kind of show a bit of solidarity with the Fermanagh ladies team.
Fair play to you.
And we're playing in the first match, and so I went out to the car, and I noticed I had a mask kit, and the ultra beds were spread around the car, and I rummaged around the car the night before, and I kind of thought, gosh, I didn't think I'd made that much of a mess in the back of the car. And so I then went around the side of the car, and then I saw stuff on the front seat, and I thought, that's not. And then I could see the glove compartment lying open, and I thought, oh God, the car has been broken into. And so then I started kind of doing a quick inventory of what was missing. And there was like sunglasses and a coat and a rugby jumper and medicine. I'm a diabetic. There was a lot of medicine, a large quantity of medicine in the boot of the car. Just different things to get there. And it was annoying, but I thought, I came here to support these ladies. I'm going to go. I'll come back. I'll do, And as soon as I sat in Crow Park, I suddenly thought of the glove compartment, and I thought of what was in it. And in it was a little black Samsonite bag that I bought at a sale in Dublin Airport, the little pouch. Mm-hmm. And inside that was the rite of anointing, a relic of St. Charles of Mount Argus, and the holy oils, the stock that I would carry.
This is what you would use if you were anointing somebody.
Yeah. And personally, at this stage, I would prefer to have lost the car than lost that, because 28 years ago, an elderly canon bought me that at the time of my ordination, and I've had it for these last 28 years, and it was the stocks that I anointed my grandparents with, my little baby Michael, my little nephew who died, my uncles and aunts, and various family, friends and relations, and their thing. My peace office is based in Ardoyne in Belfast, and my former colleague and I, Aidan Troy, kind of came to the fore during the time of the Holy Cross.
I should remind people who you are, because people might have seen there was a BBC programme that you featured in. Was it just last year that was it was broadcast?
The Priest with the Genes.
The Priest with the Genes, and you, of course, and everyone who follows any current affairs at all and is of an age will recall that. A horrible protest that went on for such a long time at on the Ardoyne in the Holy Cross Primary School, where the children had to be walked through some very nasty protests just to get to school, and you walked with those children along with Father Aidan Troy.
Yeah, Aidan and I were colleagues then, and then subsequently then he was transferred to Paris, then I was in took over as leader. I was his assistant at that stage, and then during that time I kind of built up the work on peace and reconciliation, and then you know, as well as all these very intimate, you know, and very privileged moments with people. For example, I climbed the tower of Holy Cross Church after the young man who died. It was that oil stock that was with me. A man died during rioting in Ardoyne, it was that stock that was with me. You know, it's been everywhere. It's kind of part of, and it's not just me, it almost feels like a violation of the memory of the people, you know, and all it is just a little black like bag, a very small little satchel thing, and inside that has those things. Now, it's probably been thrown, discarded. They probably thought they'd got, you know, something of value. But it's just.
And are you hoping that somebody out there who this is obviously no good to anybody except somebody like yourself, that somebody will come across this, and or even the person who took it will realise and leave it somewhere for you?
Yeah, and it's just I was the guards in Donnybrook were lovely yesterday, you know, and. You know, I 6 of my 8 years as a student was spent in Mount Argus in Dublin. So, like, Dublin's really kind of like my old hole. And, you know, 6 years ago I was hit by water cannon and I ended up on a sabbatical. And I had a form of post-traumatic stress because of all the murders and suicides and various different things that there. So Dublin kind of was my kind of like place of anonymity and kind of, and so it kind of the last thing I want is it anyway coloured, because like it is the place that I love, and I was there and I was with friends and we had such an amazing experience, you know, watching history be made, and just to come back, and it's just this means so much, because when you're in that privileged position, I just caught the tail end of your story there with those people, you know, coming to aid of somebody who'd actually fallen. Well, we're in a very privileged position, you know, as priests and religious, and when you're with somebody who's terminal or somebody who's dying, you know, the word anointing means make holy, but in fact the holiness often comes back from the person you're actually doing the blessing for, and it's a very, very sacred time, and just this little item symbolised all of those times, because people speak to you, they open up to you, the privacy of the conversation, the amount of trust they actually place, and you know, in so many cases, and even in our modern day society, you know, very recently, you know, someone who wouldn't have been very much church orientated, but asked for me, and when I came in, she sat up in a hospice, and all those people who maybe felt even alienated from the church, while the anointing was actually taking place, and this stock was like sitting on her bed, you know, was a symbol of outreach and a symbol of in a sense, basically saying, you know, I was ordained for everybody. It doesn't matter class, colour, creed, sexual orientation. Doesn't matter their age, whatever their faith journey is. What you can do there for everybody. And when you put the oils in somebody, the rite actually says the soothing oils, and it goes back to the time when oils were rubbed into the limbs of athletes to strengthen them. And that's the whole idea. And quite often when you're anointing somebody, the person who's the person you're anointing is the least recipient. It's the people who are around, the family, that gain great strength from that. And it's just, like, it's so strange. Like, I've lived under death threats from both sides of the community. I've had a bulletproof vest of all it. But this thing has really, really hit me very badly.
God. And just so the people know, you said it's a black pouch, but what do the actual oils, explain what people should be looking out for in terms of what do they actually look like, what these oils come in?
It's basically like a thin metal tube, probably about 5 or 6 inches long. It comes apart in three sections for the three different oils. And it's just a very simple little thing. It's inside a little leatherette pouch. And it was inside this little bag, which is basically like a purse with a handle on it. And I brought it everywhere, you know, whether it was, you know, to the scenes in hospitals, hospices, homes, wherever it may be, or even in the midst of riots. This thing was actually with me. It's a very, very simple little thing. It's of no value whatsoever. In fact, most people wouldn't. In fact, if you inside that, also that little bag, there's the rite. And because of down through the years have anointed so many people, the oils have stained the pages. So people would actually see this little booklet inside with a purple or burgundy cover on it, and it's just the rite of anointing. And there's also a little relic of St. Charles of Medargus, which is also in that as well.
Okay.
And there's, because I've been called out to many pretty horrific scenes, there's also a little thing of Vic spray, which you put in your nose to protect yourself from some of the scenes. So it may seem...
I think you have absolutely explained to our listeners exactly how precious it is, and why you're so upset, and why you really, really, really need somebody out there to understand that and to bring it back to you. So we hope somebody will find it, that it does get returned to you. And 51551 is our text number if anyone has any leads on that. Father Donegan, thank you for that, and best of luck. And we hope that somebody out there will have the good grace to return that very precious holy oils to you.
Yo Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And you're welcome back. Richie O'Reilly, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon to you, yes.
Yeah, you were listening to us talking about those ambulance delays earlier
was,
in the programme.
Yes. And I feel sorry for the ambulance men because they're fantastic workers. But I'm involved in a club, and about a month ago, we needed an ambulance for a person. And it was over an hour again, it arrived. And when it did arrive, the fire brigade men, the ambulance men were apologising because the ambulance had been delayed at the A&E. See, when they get to the A&E, they can't leave the A&E till that patient is taken from them so they can get that trolley to put it back into the ambulance. And last year, I was in James's with a relation of mine, and I was watching what was going on because I'm involved with the Telehospital Action Group. Mm-hmm. And there was five sets of trolleys lined up like buses waiting for James's to release them so that the ambulances could go away. That meant there was five ambulances sitting outside the door. And another relation of mine had an incident. She wasn't well. She lived in Drimna. And the ambulance that they got to take her to James's was from Kildare. It was a Kildare ambulance, and it was on the top of the Long Mile Road, and he was diverted back down to Drimna to collect her, to bring her down to James's. And there were several ambulances just sitting there. At all the hospitals that are delayed, not just James's, the whole lot of them. Once the A&E backs up, the ambulance man can't get their trolleys to go back out to collect patients, because they need their trolleys for the patients, as you know.
So it's all, one thing leads to another is what you're saying. So when the emergency departments get backed up, and as we know, you know, massive overcrowding in emergency departments all over the city now, that in turn delays the trolleys being released back into the ambulances,
and
therefore you have people sitting on a road for an hour and a half waiting for...
Yes, and it's very hard then on the ambulance men when they arrive and they're trying to explain that they're delayed, because naturally they get the full brunt of it from the person, with the sick person. Where the hell way is what's keeping you, you know? Because no matter what person you're with that takes sick, they're the sickest person in the world.
Yes, and of course it's hugely stressful as well if you're either the sick person or with somebody who's sick, because you don't know how bad they are, and you're waiting for the professionals to turn up.
Exactly. Even if the A&E at the hospitals had spare trolleys, ambulance trolleys there, that you could leave in a person on a trolley and just take the next trolley back. Now, I don't know whether that would be allowed under health and safety, or if the patient
It'd be like shopping trolleys. You just push one in and pull another one out.
Like the milk bottles, put one in and take an empty one and go off about your business. But then I think they have to sign over the patient to the A&E. I think they have to sign that they're getting the patient from the ambulance man. But what I was observing last year down in James's, you know, you have to hand over with a signature, and then you get your trolley and off you go again to get someone else, and you come back and you're back in the end of the queue again.
Yeah, I mean, you can see how it could back up very, very quickly. And I think there are resource issues as well about the number of ambulances available generally anyway. And if you've got four and five stacked up just waiting outside an emergency department in James,
I know, at the amount of fire brigade ambulances in the city about 3 years ago, I think it was only a figure of 14 or 15. Now, I know there's Eastern Health Board ones are the health board ambulances, but I don't know how many of them there is. But it's very stressful, and it's really stress on the person who is with the sick person, you know. And it's something that should be looked at, and something should be done, because coming this winter now, it's going to get worse again in the A&E, because we know what it's like at the present. But when the flus and the bugs come in, it'll be even worse, and therefore the ambulances will be delayed up even more.
Yeah, and that's more people waiting on the side of a road or in somebody's front room, hoping and praying for that ambulance to arrive.
Yes, you're standing there, and then there's many people making three and four calls into the ambulance service and saying, where are you? And they know you can do their best, you know what I mean? They're fantastic workers, and what they put up with and what they go through.
There is no doubt about that, Richie. No doubt at all. I'm going to have to leave you go. I've got another break to take. 51551. Thanks, Richie.
Thanks very much.
Cheers.